Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served this valley for decades because they've been able to find their customers the right insurance so they're completely covered. At the best price, and if there's ever a claim or a question, they take care of it right away. No issues at all. That's Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. By the way, K.J. Hamler named to the Football Writers Association of America Freshman All-America team. He absolutely earned that. All right. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
Take a deep breath. This is the season. This is it right here. Ball is snapped, placed, kicked, and it is no good! No good! It is no good, and the Eagles win!
He missed it!
It is no good! Again, it was off the upright.
First down at the
30. I told you, the mulligan, you're comfortable. You swing that club and you hit that mulligan with no problem.
He missed it! And the Eagles are heading to New Orleans.
They are headed to New Orleans.
And who knows where Cody Parkey is headed next season.
Pie de Cody Parkey. 43 yardas. El snap. Le mete el pie. Distancia, dirección. Le dio el poste. No, falló. No, señor. Los Eagles se van con la victoria. ¡Ay, papá! No, señor. Chicago. Nos vamos para New Orleans. Philadelphia gana el partido. Le dio el poste.
Merrill Reese with the English language call on Eagle 107 and the Eagles Radio Network. And obviously, Merrill and Mike Quick were outstanding. And the suit with the call on the Spanish Radio Network, courtesy of the Shikellamy Radio Network. No?
Wow. Okay.
Didn't expect that one, did you?
No. I didn't expect the guy's real name was Ricky Ricardo. I thought you were joking on the name.
Excuse me, you looked it up. Am I correct?
Yeah.
It's Ricky Ricardo.
Sure is.
On the Eagles Spanish language radio network. That is awesome. It's on the New Orleans. Let's bring in Matt Leon now. Matt, it is always great to have you with us. Welcome. And the Eagles are going on to New Orleans.
Yeah, no question about it. It was really something else. I honestly, watching the game, I had no doubt they were going to score on the fourth down play to take the lead. But conversely, I thought Parkey was going to make the kick. So I was genuinely surprised when he went shankopotamus on us.
Yeah, let's get to Nick Foles. We've talked about him a lot, Matt, but I mean, he always gives one the impression that he is the consummate pro's pro. In other words, playing behind Carson Wentz, you wouldn't know it. When he gets this opportunity to play, he's absolutely ready. What is it about Foles that, to you, makes him that kind of consummate pro's pro?
I think he has a lot of confidence in himself. I think he's got a lot of confidence in the group. Maybe most importantly, I think the group had a lot of confidence in him. And he just feels like he can, the success he's had, it kind of breeds more success. And I don't think he doesn't let the moment get too big for him. I mean, you watch that, whatever it was, 12 play, 60 yard drive on that final play, or on that final drive to take the lead. You know, it was very methodical. There weren't a ton of great plays in it. It was just execution, in the fourth down play. I think if I remember the post game comments, you know, he actually talked about Doug Peterson, like, you know, they're going to zero blitz here. Why don't we move the pocket and get something out in space? And it's exactly what they did. And it's the reason the play worked. And he hits Golden Tate for the touchdown. It's just a good combination of the right quarterback with the right coach with the right team. And the Eagles fans are reaping the benefits right now.
I want to get to the secondary for a moment because, I mean, it's been a get-to-know-you party. It's amazing how they started in one particular way, and now because of injuries and other situations, have had to change up personnel. What kind of job has Jim Schwartz done to make sure that they are, I mean, cohesive and playing the way they are right now?
No, he's done a heck of a job. I mean, when you think about, you know, it wasn't that long ago, they were bringing guys in on a Tuesday, and they were playing on a Sunday. I mean, it was that bad for a couple of weeks where they just got decimated in one area. But I think what you've seen with guys like LeBlanc, Douglas, Avante Maddox, the more reps they've gotten, the stronger, the more comfortable they look. And I think it's not just more comfortable in their individual play, but the more comfortable those guys get on the back end, the more comfortable Jim Schwartz gets doing some other things, mixing some things up. Because I think one of the problems they had, not just, you know, do you have personnel that haven't been here and obviously aren't as talented as the guys that got hurt, but you can't do a lot. When a guy's only been on the roster for 6 days and maybe has, you know, 3 hours of practice time, it's hard to mix up and disguise coverages. You got to go pretty basic. And, you know, if you're going basic, the other team knows you're going basic, and it's easier to beat. So I think it's a lot of that. A lot of credit goes to Jim Schwartz, but a lot of credit goes to a lot of those guys in the secondary, too, A lot of those guys struggled, and it would have been real easy to turtle up and, you know, to just kind of was me situation, because you're getting killed in the media and not, you know, getting beat on the field. But those guys have all gotten better. I think probably at the top of that list has got to be Rasul Douglas, who really was lost for a while. And now, you know, teams don't throw at him very often now, and he's become an outstanding open field tackler. And I think Avante Maddox has been really good. Now, Maddox, the Bears found something in him, because their touchdown drive was basically all double moves on Avante Maddox, and he constantly bit on the first one. But he's played really well, almost had an interception if he could have gotten a foot down. It's really been impressive to watch, and you kind of look at where that defense was the last time they played the Saints, you know, when they lose 48-7, to where they are now, where, you know, you're kind of almost expecting to only give up one or no touchdowns. It's really been a remarkable transformation.
Yeah, I give them a lot of credit. I liked Maddox when he was at Pitt, by the way. I liked Maddox a lot when he was at Pitt. But he's become actually a very good pro.
Oh, yeah, he's become kind of a Swiss Army knife. I mean, you can see, you know, depending on the situation, they put him on the slot, put him outside. He's moved around, actually did a little safety early on when they were, you know, first ravaged by injuries in the secondary. You know, like we say, you know, like you're going to have rookie mistakes and rookie problems like he had at times yesterday. But for the most part, played wise beyond his years. And as a mid-round draft pick, has really been a steal and looks like a guy they can count on for years to come.
All right. Golden Tate obviously ended up catching what proved to be the one that put them in front to stay in this particular game. Alshon Jeffrey has really stepped up, too. I think people forget he was out for a long period of time. What has that combination meant to the Eagles' offense getting some jump to it?
Well, I think Jeffrey, the one, you know, he really has been special here, like he was special in December and January last year.
Yes.
And he and Foles, I don't want to say that Jeffrey and Wentz don't have a chemistry, because they do. But what you see with Foles is a willingness to kind of throw the jump balls up there with confidence that Jeffrey's going to go get them. And that has led to a lot more chunk plays in that 20 to 30 range, because he'll just kind of lob it up there. And, you know, what Jeffrey is the most of the time, the bigger body on a smaller defensive back, take advantage of it. Golden Tate's been an interesting, you know, because he really – there's only been one game this year where I think from the eye test he really looked like he was an organic part of the offense. A lot of the other times it looks like he's been kind of force-fed, but he was big, you know, on Sunday. He had a big catch where he got absolutely blasted. I think it was late in the first quarter or early in the second quarter. And obviously the touchdown. You know, they've got a lot of weapons on the outside, and Foles is distributing the ball well, kind of being the point guard, as people like to point out. It's really been something.
It's interesting how the Bears beat the Vikings, and that's what put the Eagles in. Essentially, they picked the matchup that they wanted. Yet I look at the Bears as a team, the way they play, especially on offense, and I don't care what kind of offensive genius he's alleged to be. They play offense in such a way where it keeps you in the game. Is that fair?
I absolutely agree, and I was kind of interested in some of their decisions offensively. Specifically, I thought you'd see a lot more Tariq Cohen. I thought they would design stuff to get him in space and kind of get him one-on-one, and he really wasn't a factor. Now, I'm not smart enough X and O-wise to know if the Eagles did things to eliminate him or if the Bears just decided to go in a different direction. I think, you know, Mitch Trubisky put up some big games early in the season, but I think he kind of did it against some suspect defenses and some games where it was a feeding frenzy. I think he's kind of point. He didn't look real. I know there was at one point he was running and it looked like he pulled up a little bit, and then he wasn't really that effective running the football. And I think that's a big part of who he is. And if he can't do that, he's kind of limited. But no, I watched that, and I thought going in the Eagles were the better team. I think the Eagles, watching that game, proved to be the better team. I think the two interceptions kind of changed the balance. It probably cost the Eagles 6, maybe 10 points.
I agree with that.
And, you know, if they score on those drives, like you kind of had the feeling they were, it's a different game. And I don't want to say the Eagles win easily, but the Eagles kind of win comfortably. And, you know, but however it happens and however you get it, you take it.
Even when the Eagles were turning the ball over, if you're just watching the game and you don't look at the score box, you feel like the better team's Philadelphia. I mean that's just the way the game was playing out. Philadelphia looked like the better team.
I agree.
And now let's flip it to the other side. New Orleans offensively will not keep the Philadelphia Eagles in the game. The Eagles defense is going to have to keep them in the game against the Saints offense. What are the great challenges in this one that everyone knows they have to take care of?
They've got them like they did in the first game. It's going to be important that they kind of keep the Saints in front of them. I'll be interested to see if they use kind of the same defensive philosophy they used when they beat the Rams. I think it was kind of a quarters coverage across the back end and kind of kept everything in front of them, forced them to go 10-12 plays, and they're going to get their points, but you make them work for it, and you hope that they make a mistake before you. But it's going to be interesting. It ain't going to be 48-7, that I can guarantee.
I can guarantee that too. My friend, thanks so much. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year. Thanks so much.
All right, great to have you with us on the show today. Thanks to Matt Leon. Eagles move on to take on the New Orleans Saints.
They're Cody Parking. 43.
Slow down there. Eagles take on the Saints on Sunday for the right to go to the NFC Championship game.
Actually, I found a little background info on Ricky Ricardo. He has called Philadelphia Eagles games for the last 8 years. He is their lone Spanish announcing Philadelphia Eagles guy. Pretty cool.
You know, I try to help and educate the audience.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I mean, you've now found, we've found two things. Number one, you found the Spanish language broadcast for the Eagles. You found that he's been there for 8 years. And we have also found the heir apparent to Shikellamy football.
I found his Twitter account as well. We are now following him on Twitter. Maybe we'll get a follow back. I'll send him a message and invite him to be on the show.
Dick Girardi played that for Matt LePay does Wisconsin. I think a lot of people know that. They've heard Matt before. Matt's one of the best in the business. And and
He played that for us last night. We were in hysterics. Hysterics only because of how good it was. And when you hear it in a foreign language and the enthusiasm of what sounds like a World Cup soccer call in combination with the NFL and the Philadelphia Eagles just made it really, really cool.
A little hint of Andreas Cantor. Yeah, I can hear that. Yeah.
I mean, you know, no senor is equivalent to goal. And the Athletic had a great picture of the ball with the paint on it. How's also the other one? How about the bear in the end zone? Did you see the mascot?
Oh yeah, kind of like keeled over.
Boom! Went down. I guess in total. Yeah, yeah. I found that entertaining. Now I didn't see any of this live. Obviously, it was opposite the Penn State game, so I didn't see it. You know, Dick had it on his phone while we were doing the game. And then, you know, we were in a commercial break. He says, they're going to kick a... He says, I guess it was fourth down, right? He goes, fourth down. He says, they're going to go for it, obviously. And then I guess Tate scored, and he looked at me. He put a thumbs up, and I said, and the Eagles scored. Now, here's for Penn State basketball. They're going to have a whiteout coming up. And against Michigan State, but the game's opposite the Eagles. Yeah, it's the way it is. Everybody is declaring their own you know, they have to program their own deal, so all right. Yeah, that's going to be... that'll be on Sunday. But there you go. They're going to, you know, go out and attack the New Orleans Saints. Not going to be 48-7 this time, I tell you that.
Quote from Ricky Ricardo earlier today, I'm completely hoarse. I'm drinking lemon tea and honey.
Oh, good. I think it's, first of all, it's great for this reason. I don't think a lot of people realize that they have a Spanish language broadcast. And I mean, this at least brings light to it.
I see that he's also doing Spanish play-by-play for the Yankees as well.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I mean, you know, as legendary as Vin Scully is and should be, there's also Jaime Harine. Jaime Harine, whom Vin Scully has nothing but the highest respect for, and vice versa. Jaime Harine has done the Dodgers for 58 years. 58 years. And almost every team now, in one form or another, in the pros, has a Spanish language broadcast. And obviously, you know, Ricky Ricardo is obviously outstanding. I give him all the credit of the world. He's doing the Yankees. He's doing the Eagles. He's carving out a really nice career for himself. So I think that's terrific. I'm glad we're following that trip. I'm glad we're following him. Yeah, maybe he'll follow back and you'll double the ratings of the show. All right. So, what? Wrong way to go?
No, it's just one at a time. That's right.
It's what we do. That's what we do.
One step forward, better than two steps back.
Right. Now, of course, you brought this up in the meeting this morning, and of course, naturally, the digital media guy said, I can speak Spanish, see?
By the way, your birthday was also brought up in the meeting this morning. A very happy birthday to you, sir.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that.
From all of us here.
Most of you. All right. I have a birthday.
You got me by 2 seconds. That's your show.
Like, all I know is if I know he's doing the Yankees and I know he's doing the Eagles, but I would think he's got most Friday nights off, don't you? In the fall?
Sure.
We should ask him. It's our way of bringing more culture to the Valley. No?
We're here to serve.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, KL Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And today's show brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served this valley for decades because they've been able to find the right insurance at the best price. And if something ever happens, well, guess what? They will be your advocate that will take care of business for you. They'll get you the right answers. And they will also make sure that if there's a claim, they'll go to work as if it happened to them because they're your partner. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. You have to have a great relationship with your insurance people. There's no doubt about that, especially in this era. And Purdy, they're the pros' pros. I was talking about Nick Foles earlier being a pros' pro. That's Purdy Insurance. All right. I'm going to make a quick comment. The officiating this weekend was, would you say, interesting in the NFL? I would say it was interesting.
Yeah, I would. I'd go even one further with the... The video reviews were, wow, very, very below average. Like the line that Al Michaels said last night during the national broadcast. Is like, are they making this up as they go? Terry McCauley got a little chuckle out of that.
Well, in some ways they are. I mean, to be honest with you, they went with the we don't know what to do bailout and the call stands. All right, that's when they don't know what to do. He caught the ball. He fumbled the ball. Now, you are taught, and you know, I've talked about how many times have you heard me talk about there are so many times in the NFL and the NBA to some extent where fundamentals take a holiday. Well, to be honest with you, the Eagles blew that play completely. Blew it. I'm going to go back to a game earlier in the year for Penn State. The first game of the season they're playing Appalachian State. Appalachian State threw a ball that I thought was clearly backwards. And the ball was laying there, and everyone acted as if it was an incomplete pass. And it wasn't. It was a fumble. The ball eventually trickled out of bounds. And a couple of Penn State players were near the ball. They are taught, and I know this because I'm there every single day, they are taught that even on an incomplete forward pass to scoop and score. Now, why are they taught that? They are taught that so they get used to scooping and scoring so that when there is a situation like that one that presents itself in the Appalachian State game, your instinct is to go pick up the ball anyway and go. Well, despite all the training and despite all the instruction, despite being hammered in over and over and over again, the ball laid there and then eventually trickled out of bounds. And I pointed out on the broadcast, that is something that's going to be brought up in the team meeting on Sunday, that you are taught to do this and didn't do it, and it costs, quote, you getting the ball. I brought it up in the broadcast right away. Well, the Eagles yesterday, to be honest with you, the NFL, that should have been a catch, and the ball should have been put at the 11-yard line or the 10-yard line, wherever it was, right around there. I know it goes against the Eagles. I understand this. The Eagles caught a break there. But he makes the catch. He takes three steps. Then he fumbles the football. The Eagles walked away from it, and then what kills the play is the official picking up the dead ball. That's what kills the play. Once the official picks up the ball, the play's over.
Yeah, Tony Dungy and Rodney Harrison brought up the exact same thing you just said during the halftime last night with Mike Tirico on NBC. Yeah, if that ball's just laying there, you got to dive for it. You got to keep going like the play is still going on, like you hadn't heard the referee's whistle yet.
Right, exactly. You've got to keep going on the play. You are taught, if you are properly taught and properly trained, that is what you do. I have seen this reiterated over and over and over. I've heard James Franklin talk about it over and over and over on this level. You know darn well on the next level they're doing the same thing. And then the play was over, and typical of today's NFL player, they're more consumed with celebrating whatever but magnanimous moment it happens to be, instead of doing the right thing and picking it up and then having the official tell you, no, 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 the play's over. Have them tell you it's over. Okay? Force them to make a call. And the Eagles didn't. I watched the replay. He caught the ball. He took three steps. He fumbled the ball, which, by the way, was a great play. Who made the play for the Eagles on that play? I mean, you want to talk about a great determined play, getting your hand in there and ripping it out of there? Who made that play for Philadelphia? Do you remember?
I do not right off the top. I'll have to ask Catrillo. He may know.
Because, look, the Eagles have had so many changes in that defensive backfield. It's remarkable what they've been able to do. But that ball's a fumble, and they make it up. You're like, what? Stans is called. And, you know, how many times have you heard me on the football broadcast say it's going to be Stans is called? Because that's the bailout default call. Now, if you can't see the ball, like we talk about, like at the goal line, how many times have you heard Jack and me talk about there's so many bodies in between, it's going to be Stans is called because you can't see where the ball is, right? So that's the only thing you can do is Stans is called, all right? And so that's what they went with, and they're wrong. That was a fumble, and the Eagles blew it and didn't pick it up, and they lost the opportunity on what was a completed pass. And guess what? As soon as the official touched the ball, which was just sitting there, the play is dead, and it should have been a catch for the Bears.
That was either Trey Sullivan or Cravon LeBlanc. We're going to try to look up the play and see if I pull the video up. Take a look.
I want to say it's LeBlanc.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's one. Now I want to get to college basketball. And so, and you guys can, as soon as you figure out who it was, I just want to give credit where credit's due, because that really was a heck of a play. Nobody else made a great play in that play, but the guy that broke it up did. That got in there and ripped the ball out for a fumble. In college basketball, is the only sport that encourages bad defense as a default bailout. I'm going to jump in the last second, whoa, and get hit, oh, and suddenly it is a charge. 9 out of 10 of those are blocks. Start calling 9 out of 10 of them what they are, blocks. And then there is now what's becoming the I'm a bad defender play, I'm going to flop. In other words, my goal is to fool the official. This is where officials need to be angry about this. They're trying to fool you. I'll give you three examples last night. Rashear Bolton, second half, boom, goes down. Okay, no call. The officials handled it perfectly. No call. Rashear Bolton clearly flopped. John Hara, down the floor, gets hit, boom. John Hara goes down. John Hara clearly flops, right? And the official calls it correctly. Then there's the first play of the second half. Nate Reavers on Watkins. Watkins backs him in, backs it. Oh! He goes back. Oh! Offensive foul. Really? This is where, you know, I've talked how many times, no matter what you do in sports, whether you're a player, a coach, an announcer, or an official, or you're at the scoring table, if you cannot be any good at the job unless you have a feel for the game. You can't coach it well unless you have a feel for the game. You can't play it well unless you have a feel for the game. You can't announce it unless you have a feel for a game, and you cannot officiate it if you have no feel for the game. You are rewarding bad defense. Everybody else is trying to put more offense into their game except college basketball, because they keep allowing officials to allow bad defense to be rewarded. The NBA got rid of it by fining players. You'd be amazed at what a $100,000 fine does. I don't think I'm going to do that anymore. Well, what college basketball needs to do, and there was a rule in place, so follow the rules. Start calling technical fouls. Flopping needs to get out of the game. And the more officials you have that have a mediocre to poor feel for the game, the more times you're going to get flopping and the offensive player being penalized. After a while, it's enough. And believe me, every time a Penn State player does it, we mention it right away, it's a flop. I don't like it when Penn State does it. I don't like it when the opponent does it. Because I just think it just kills the game. You're trying to get more juice into the game. Some guy going, and falling back, you know, as if he was hit by an object from the stands. I mean, you're telling me that after 2 years in the weight room, Nate Reavers, whatever Mike Watkins did enough to knock him silly into the ground when Mike was just trying to back in and set up for a hook shot? Really? Okay. College basketball is the only sport that rewards bad defense. I got in the way. Oh, it's a block. Oh, no, it's a charge. I jumped to the way. No, okay. Why don't you get in front of a guy, make a play, okay? Don't hand check or any of that stuff, and just play defense. Use your feet. Use high hands. Play. Quit trying to steal a call by fooling the official. That's all these guys are doing. Obviously, it's a charge. If I plant myself and I stand there and I wait and I get belted, that's a charge. 9 out of 10 of those are blocks. The example I just cited is absolutely a charge. 9 out of 10 of those are blocks. 9 out of 10 of those they're moving. 9 out of 10 of those should go, the benefit of the doubt should go to the offensive player. And flopping should be rewarded with, I'm sorry, the foul's on you. Oh, and by the way, you get a technical foul. Right? And if the coach yells at me, I look over and say, stop teaching him to flop. Tell him how to play defense. It is hurting the game. You got a great game, and right now you're hurting it by rewarding bad defense. All right, who made the play?
So it was Cravon LeBlanc, 36 seconds left in the first half, with that deep ball that Trubisky threw to Anthony Miller. Found this last night, too, on Twitter. NFL officiating posted this then later in the evening. The receiver controlled the ball with 2 feet down and took an additional step, so it was a catch. However, because he was not down by contact and there was, quote, no video evidence of a clear recovery or the ball going out of bounds, end quote, the ruling of incomplete stands. And that's from Al Riveron, the official.
Nice try, Al. He caught the ball. Okay? All right? Your official made the mistake and picked up the ball. It's Bears ball at the 10-yard line. He caught the ball. To me, that's the equivalent. As soon as the official touches it, the play's dead. He caught the ball, took two steps. That's the equivalent to me of the ball going out of bounds. What's the difference? When the ball laid there and the official picked the ball up, the play's dead. When the ball goes out of bounds, the play's dead. If the ball had gone out of bounds, would the Bears have had the ball? Yes. You could explain it all you want, but guess what? Give me a W, give me an R, give me an O, give me an N, give me a G. Wrong. I mean, use common sense. I mean, it's the Eagles' fault for not picking the ball up. The second, I mean, the official made the mistake and picked the ball up. Now, also, let's say this about the Bears. Somebody for the Bears should have run down, and they should have jumped on it. You've got to force these guys to make calls. Can't assume. Because, as Tony Randall once said in The Odd Couple, when you assume, you make. Out of you and me. We'll come back with more in a moment. On News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855, or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Al Michaels is right. They make it up as they go. I don't know what to do here. I don't know. He caught the ball. Now, it worked in the Eagles' favor, so, I mean, in the end, to me, the better team won the game anyway. I mean, the Eagles were the better team. You watch that game. If you're watching that game and you're not looking at the scoreboard, the Eagles were the better team. All right. And we'll have the game for you on Eagle 107 coming up on Sunday. Dwayne Haskins declared for the NFL draft from Ohio State. And Greg Madison is going to leave Michigan. He's going to become the defensive coordinator at Ohio State. Now, for those of you asking this, well, wait a minute, what about Greg Schiano? Greg Schiano's out. K.J. Hamler was also named to the Football Writers Association of America Freshman All-America team. Deserves that, no doubt about that. And 11 early entries for Penn State started their first day of class today. And then Penn State basketball back to work coming up on Thursday at Nebraska. Again, Penn State, no question, overscheduled in the preseason. I know, you know it's going to make them better, tougher down the road, so forth. But in conjunction with now a 20-game Big Ten season, it makes it tough. Especially when you've got, again, Penn State is a program that needs to be an older program. You know, many programs, Michigan State's one where they can do really well with one and dones. obviously, you know, the Dukes and Kentuckys of the world all can do better with, you know, all do great with one and dones. But Penn State's one of those programs, like Notre Dame, for example, that does better when they have older teams. And I don't mean just like you build up to 4 years, have a great year, and then boom, you fall back and you start over again. I'm talking about building a program where, yeah, you make that run and all of a sudden you get to the NCAA tournament, but you're doing it in such a way where you're then breaking in younger players. And for Penn State, if Josh Reeves had left early or Lamar Stevens had left early, I'd be having the same conversation as Tony Carr. I felt when they recruited Josh Reeves, they got a really good player. That was a four-year player. I thought when they got Lamar Stevens, they got a really good player. That was a four-year player. I thought when they got Tony Carr, they got a really good player who was a four-year player. Now, fortunately for Tony, he was good enough to get to the draft. That also works out in recruiting as well. They can't use the, hey, go to Penn State, you can't get to the league from Penn State. You can't do that anymore. You can't say that. So, I mean, there is that plus to it, plus Tony's making money. It's good for him, good for his family. But when you're an older team, say, for example, he stays, and this would be the same conversation with Josh or Lamar. Say he stays. Now you're breaking in Rajir Bolden. Now you're breaking in Miles Dredd. Now you're breaking in Myron Jones. Instead of, boom. Okay, I know that Shep Garner's, you know, fourth-year player. He has to go. I know he's gone, but you know what? Now you can kind of break these guys in. Who has the hot hand at a particular night? Whatever it may be, you're breaking them in. That's the kind of program Penn State needs to be if they want to have long-term success, where out of a 10-year span, they're an older team in a minimum of at least six of those years, if not seven. You know, an older team meaning dominated by seniors, juniors, and then a growing sophomore class that then allows you to break the freshmen in. And if it turns out they're really good and can have a prominent higher-level role, yeah. But that's the kind of program that they need to be. I felt Patrick Chambers was on his way to establishing that, quote, older program where older is better and you can then break in younger players instead of having to force-feed them. Because the other issue that every college basketball team has had, whether it's Bucknell, whether it's Penn State, whether it's Michigan, it doesn't matter. They keep changing the rules on the selection committee as to how they do things. Everybody's scheduled for the 17-18 season. Then they announce the quad system. This year, everybody's scheduled for the 18-19 season. And then in the summer, then they told everybody about the new net ranking system. So everybody's been scheduling behind the eight ball because their scheduling doesn't match up with the system the NCAA put in place.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.